want to remind folks that you can really help us out by participating in our In the Money Media listener survey. We're going to be taking entries until the end of the day on Friday, inthemoneypodcast.com/survey to find it. This is your chance to shape In the Money Media's content in the future. And also, one person who takes the survey is going to win a $500 bet this summer. Check it out, inthemoneypodcast.com/survey. Today's show is brought to you in part by our friends at LTN Global. LTN Global offers innovative TV production services that helps racetracks raise their profile, bring all of the TV tricks they've learned from other sports into horse racing. LTN is a technology and production company that is helping racetracks create and distribute content at high quality and good value. And LTN offers distribution services to get tracks seen in more online and offline spaces than ever before. Visit ltnglobal.com to learn more. That URL once again, ltnglobal.com. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, June 22nd. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again, continuing our Innovators in Racing series. This has been brought to you, as you heard at the top of the show, by our friends at LTN Global. And on today's show, to learn a little bit more about exactly what LTN Global means and what they do, we've got Rich Rosa of LTN Global. Rich, how are things?
Hey, things are great. Thanks for having me on.
You clearly were not the good luck charm for our Islanders last night, despite making the sojourn across the state. What do you have to say for yourself?
Well, I took a trip, drove a couple hours, and I wore my favorite team's jersey, and I had to leave the arena with maybe 7 minutes to go. It was 7-0, and I caught all the boo birds from the local fans. I guess that's what you do when you wear an opposing team's jersey to a semifinal game that your team gets trashed at.
Oh my goodness gracious. Well, it's not done yet. We've seen this team come back before. You're a big sports fan, you're a big horse racing fan, and I love the way you talk about your interest in racing. It's not that you don't appreciate the sport of it, but it sounds to me when I talk to you, like many of us, the numbers, the game within the game, the gambling element is paramount to your interest in the sport. That's not the case of that many people who work behind the scenes in racing. So I wanted to start there. First of all, am I describing your attraction to horse racing accurately?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Definitely much more on the gambling side for sure.
And how did it develop? Like, where did you first learn there was a thing called horse racing? I can tell from your accent that you're from the same part of the world as me, but give me some details.
Absolutely. Born, bred, Astoria, Queens, New York City. Obviously proximity to the great racetracks there, early days, driven primarily, like most of us, by a parent. My dad was a racing fan. I found myself at an early age, I probably shouldn't admit this, but before I was legal to wager, finding myself in the local OTB and, trying to cash tickets like everybody else, you know, maybe the good old fashioned way, collars, names, all that kind of stuff. But later in life, you know, obviously learned how to read the form and found the math intriguing, found my way to different disciplines of handicapping, started reading books, wound up finding the old Sarton guys, if you're familiar with them.
Sure.
Yeah, and how they tear apart times and fractions and try to derive all kinds of things about pace and stuff like that. And I followed that even for a while, made my own software. Commercially, put it out commercially to sort of take apart races, model them. Maybe you could call it like early AI. And going back, you know, 15 years or so, and infused some of my interest. I'm a recreational programmer. I enjoy the puzzles that you find within, you know, writing code. And I think it marries itself very well to handicapping data because you have this, you know, voluminous amount of information that you really have to make sense of. And when you apply your own programming style to that data, you find, you know, outcomes maybe that other people don't. And I definitely enjoyed that. I just don't have the time for that anymore because I work on this stuff, you know, all day professionally. So I have to find different ways to feed my handicapping interest. So I don't make my own software anymore, but I have interest in some of the software products out there or different kinds of ways of looking at handicapping data. And I just find it all, you know, very, very interesting.
Lot to unpack there. First, I want to go back to the books. You mentioned from where you're coming from. I assume you're familiar with Dr. Z and some of his work. I would imagine he would have been one of the guys you were reading back in the day. Bill Ziemba.
Bill Ziemba. I should look. I'm pretty sure. I got to unpack
Efficiency of Racetrack Markets.
You and I talked about that book. I'm sorry. That's the big green book that everybody buys, and really nobody knows how to figure out.
if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. Right.
Yes. Great book. If you're willing to apply your college calculus to it and, you know, try to figure out some things that other people have tried to unpack in that. I've seen, you know, many of the I guess you could say bigger players or the bigger figures makers, you know, refer to that book over and over. And, you know, it definitely has relevancy in horse racing. I think now you see some of the other students of analytics come into the game and try to, you know, apply different AI concepts to this, you know, maybe just going back and reading the Green Book, probably. Yeah.
It's definitely a seminal work in this direction. You talked about the Sarton methodology. I think I probably first became truly aware of it reading the classic Tom Brohammer book, sure, Modern Pace Handicapping. And what really amazes me about those guys back in the day is they weren't doing it with computers. They're making these feet per second calculations by hand. It must have taken 6 hours to do a card properly. And these days you can hit four buttons and have an opportunity to get a similar level of information. It's just amazing to me. You talked about developing your own computer program. I'm curious, what can you tell us about that and what that's out there now commercially? Do you look at as sort of a substitute for doing your own work for people out there who might be interested to look at some of this data but don't have that calculus background?
Yeah, sure. So I started downloading, you know, files like all the Sarton guys do, and started putting together Excel spreadsheets and doing my handicapping, you know, that way. And then I elevated it. I started importing it into my own program just so I could tear it apart a little bit better. I started getting graphical. I made it web-based. So at the time when I actually marketed it, it was the only web-based handicapping program out there. So they're a little known outfit in Georgetown, Kentucky, called Handicappers Data Warehouse.
Sure.
They support a lot of the boutique developers of software products out there.
And HDR, I think, right, uses them. Right. The Ken Massa, who's an extended friend of the show as well. I think they use HDW.
Right. So those of us have encountered them, they know what that is and the added value that they apply to the data you get, you know, customarily from the Equibase feed. They put a lot of stuff on top of that helps people like the Sartanists and the other software makers do their thing. And so I did that. I marketed a product through them. It sold real well for a while. I wound up getting customers, started to innovate a bit on that, creating some analytics and the kind of thing, the way it went, like there's so many different factors you could think about when you handicap. I said, well, what factors at what track, when you look at them over a long period of time, and if you highlight those relevancy factors, you know, what's your ROI on that? And I started the model selections based on that. Like what works? What works at, five furlongs on turf at this track? And, you know, what, you know, signature stats should you look at? And I wound up having a little bit of a following. But then, you know, life gets in the way, your professional life, like what I did at the time to actually make income. You know, wife, family, kids, dog, the whole thing. And I kind of let it languish a little bit. And, you know, eventually, you know, I couldn't market it anymore. But it was a lot of fun. What I did, learned a lot from it. And you asked, like, what am I using now? So Handicap is Debtor Warehouse does put out a product called Running Style Positions. And it's basically, it's like sorting on a sheet, more or less. So I try to use that as much as possible because I could look at that at a glance and look at factors that I'm interested in and sort of put together like the pace of a race, you know, in a couple of minutes. That's what I think I need to do. By the way that I handicap, I'm certainly a multi-race better for the most part. So I just really want to disqualify courses that can't win and try to figure out who can win and see what's going on my ticket and try to optimize my ticket based on, you know, what I see.
Oh, it does sound very similar to a lot of what we hear from a lot of the computer methodologies that are so much a part of the pool. But I want to put a pin in that. I want to talk about what you're doing now and talk about LTN Global and how you got involved and what's going on with this unique production and distribution company in a space, horse racing TV production that hasn't always been known for innovation.
Sure. So I cut my teeth first on TV with a company called Civilian Military Combine. I managed some, I was part of a group that managed investments for the ownership, the former ownership of the New York Mets. And through that, I became the CEO for an obstacle race course company that basically competed against Tough Mudder and Spartan and those kinds of brands. Company's not around anymore, but we did cut a TV show. We aired it on some sports regionals, including SNY. It was the first time I ever got involved in, you know, trying to understand how television production works and how to put together a compelling television production for a sporting event. So I think I got really interested in that, like how that works. So fast forward, I wound up becoming COO for an events company that led me to LTN, started talking to the team at LTN, and they were doing all kinds of things in horse racing, but I'm not sure that there was a horse racing expert on staff. So I became interested in like taking over that vertical, and eventually I came aboard at LTN about 2.5 years ago, and I run the horse racing, which is under the banner of Wagering and Simulcast. So Vice President of Business Development. And I have a definite attention and focus on the horse racing product. So we've had customers all along the space. Just to tell you kind of what we do in a nutshell, we provide a landscape of video services for broadcasters, distributors, producers, anybody that's basically creating or moving content from one place to another place anywhere around the world. We have a sub-second network that allows you to take video, which is, you know, basically, you know, big data in a big pipe, and it has to be compressed, and it's difficult to move on a terrestrial network from one place to another. We have great technology that allows us to do this. This is not a technical call, so I won't get into like the deep tech of it, but just explaining it that way, what we are is a replacement for a satellite. So
right.
The whole world is moved from using satellite as this means to get a live event from one place to another, now using terrestrial IP-based networks. So LTN already had a customer base in horse racing. I came aboard and really, you know, tried to accelerate adoption inside our business because I think our business needs it. Our business needs better ways to do things with video, including video quality, getting video to the right places, like the broadcasters. And when I say broadcasters generically, thinking about NBC, Fox, and TVG, and over in the UK, like, you know, people like Sky and other folks that want to show US racing, but they want it very fast. They need it in a low latency format. They need it high quality, meaning high definition with as little or no artifacts as possible and matching as much of the original production as possible. So we expertise in that. But we also do production. So we bring a brand, the production that's kind of unique to sporting events. Instead of bringing a whole team in a truck and trotting everybody out to a particular facility, what we like to do is bring a smaller truck, bring cameras, people that need to man cameras and basically, you know, film the event itself. We take all of that video, we bring it back to a central location. Our production studio is in the suburbs of Kansas City, where we have a great team of people who work on all kinds of sporting events all day long, assembling these shows, basically doing the production direction, the audio, the switching, the graphics, the data integration. So you don't have to do it on site. And I think the internet has afforded us that luxury of being able to have very high quality people do these things in a centralized place. And the fact that LTN has these transport products, this sub-second, you know, moving of video as a powerful tool, you know, these two capabilities give us the ability to produce great live content, but do it centrally from a location where we can have all our expert people do it.
You said a bunch of interesting things there, but the two that I want to highlight are, I feel like we're in a day and age right now with horse racing where there are many tracks, even big tracks on some days, they're making a lot more money as a TV studio than they're making as an operational event venue. So when you're dealing with that, talking about a way to transmit a higher quality signal with fewer strings attached than have been in the past, and to be able to do it in an efficient way, a higher quality product that comes faster for cheaper, it feels like something pretty useful in the horse racing space. I want to talk about some of the other sports stuff that LTN has done before we dive down into some of the specifics of the racing side. There's a cute little line in the copy I've been reading on the shows about taking things learned from other sports and applying them to horse racing. Historically, what are some of the LTN global productions on the sports side of things and the entertainment side of things to give people an idea of the reach of the company?
Sure. Yeah. All kinds of things. We have a strong focus on college sports. So a lot of the college football, college basketball, things like volleyball, you know, anything collegiate that you see on some of the prime networks, you know, there's a really good chance that there's an LTN crew there. There's a chance that we're producing that out of a pod in Kansas City. We're involved in entertainment. A lot of that stuff is hard to talk about, but you'll see us out there on some of the shows that people compete on, and maybe they were remote for part of the pandemic. I think the pandemic brought a great focus on what it means to have, you know, very low latency two way video on an entertainment program. So you may have seen people competing, you know, singing or other talents where they're sitting from their home, and their, you know, judges are at their homes too, and they were able to like sync up this live video and have this two-way conversation. You know, we helped with that. We do some game show stuff. You know, just anything in the production landscape where we can add a lot of value, you know, with the kind of products and the centralization that we have.
One thing I did a little bit of writing about specifically that you did in horse racing was at the Breeders' Cup with the Contender Cam. I love this idea. Describe for folks what it was if they missed it. Where did that idea come from, and how did you make that? How did you make that a reality, that vision?
Yeah, sure. So that came out of multiple conversations, attributing very special people to it, Peter Rotundo and G.D. Hieronymus from Keeneland, and I and probably others. So I'm going to miss some crediting of this, and I apologize. But that idea sort of germinated, you know, between us. Like, how can we utilize this technology that LTN has and bring the customer, you know, the viewer of a Breeders' Cup who might normally be at the racetrack and it, you know, can't be because we didn't have fans last year, but have them be able to see, you know, their horse, their entry, their interest in a much more personal way. I mean, I say personal, meaning they get to choose. So we created Contender Cam. So it goes like this. Horses come into the paddock at Keeneland last year, and we had 14 iPhones. They were on gimbals, which are those, you know, mobile, you know, holders. And they, each one of the 14 iPhones basically followed their horse around. So you were able to see, you know, as if you were in the paddock, maybe even better because you were right up close. Those 14 iPhones went into the building when the horses went into the racetrack, and they followed their connections. So once those horses got out onto the racetrack, there were 14 cameras that were managed by Keeneland that were on the rooftop that followed those entries around. So you got to see them warming up, and you got to see everything about that horse, so you could make a decision whether or not you wanted to wager on that entry. Race went off. Then you got to see your horse wash down. So if you were an owner and interested how the horse came out of the race, you weren't there, you could see it. All of this was switched and put into a digital interface that was appeared on BreedersCup.com, their OTT platform, and TVG.com and their platforms. So you were able to go on there and say, I'm interested in the two horse, and press number two, and you tuned into the two horse for that, you know, 30-minute time frame from the minute they started into the paddock to the minute that they left. Some interesting byproducts of that. I mentioned earlier that we sent those iPhones into the grandstand and they followed their connections around. So we also created footage that NBC aired. So that footage was put into the NBC truck where they picked and chose what reactions for connections reactions they wanted to show on the air. And we clipped those. We also put them out to social. So we had a team from Grand Slam Social that were monitoring all of these 14 feeds looking for good content. And certainly after the race, when connections reacted, and it wasn't always like the top connections, because a lot of times that's what you see in a horse racing broadcast. You can't have cameras on everybody. Well, we did. So we got some interesting reactions, made it to social, also made it to NBC. So it really had a great effect for everybody. It created a lot of terrific content that everybody was able to use and see. And I'm pretty sure we're going to bring that back for Del Mar this year. So
I hope so. I thought it was great. I mean, it's so innovative, and that ability, especially for last year, but going forward as well, to put people who can't be there at the event and give them a view better than you can potentially get at the event. I say as somebody who was in the paddock there, or just on the outside rail looking in, and then having flipping around on the computer and the phone and seeing what you guys were doing. It was a very authentic and innovative way to bring race coverage. Let's talk about some of the remote broadcasts you've done, basically helping tracks with their simulcast signals. We've talked offline about Louisiana Downs, what you have going on with Ellis Park coming up for this summer. I'm curious to hear, I mean, I assume it's that remote production process that you've described in terms of being able to have a much smaller crew and have it all produced efficiently offsite. But let's talk about how you've been able to shape some of the content as well for those smaller tracks.
Yeah, sure. So no, let's talk about Ellis, because that's coming up on Sunday. So we're going to debut LTN's production at Ellis Park starts on Sunday afternoon. It is what we call the classic LTN Flex production. We're bringing in a team of camera people with high definition cameras to Ellis Park, using LTN equipment to get back to Kansas City, where our producer, director, audio, replay, even down to PTZ operator, there is going to be at least seven cameras covering Ellis Park. And some of those cameras are going to be remotely operated. Like when you look at the paddock, you'll see you'll get a better view from the paddock than someone actually moving a mobile camera, because we'll have that PTZ operator basically use the joystick to select a view that the user should see from a really good vantage point in that paddock. We bring that program back. We apply all the good stuff, make sure audio is correct, make sure the graphics are correct. We integrate the data, so you're going to see the latest parimutuel data. And then we ship it off to people that are going to take that in simulcast, and they get it as quickly as they possibly can get it. So you get a very high quality production with everything that you need and expect on a simulcast show. We also do different things, like I'll give you a great example at Louisiana Downs. It's the same kind of production that we're going to do at Ellis Park. One of the features that everybody seems to like about Louisiana Downs is we integrate a remote handicapper. So we have Peter Rotundo Sr. from the TV show Horse Players.
Sure.
Is our handicapper. I'm sure a lot of your audience know Peter.
Oh, yeah.
And he sits at home in New York, and he's involved watching all of our production camera feeds. You know, he's sitting there, you know, listening to the audio of the production, basically seeing what's going on at the racetrack. And then when his time comes, he gets on the air with our track announcer, John McGarry, and the two of them have a two-box conversation side by side. John's in Shreveport, and Peter's in New York, and they have a terrific couple of minute conversation about handicapping the race, and it goes really well. It's very fluid, and it integrates terrific into the program. And I think a lot of people follow, because I watch on social media people talking about it. And this is all done remote. You know, this is Peter, being Peter in Staten Island. He doesn't need to be at the racetrack to add a bunch of value to that production. So, we're always proud of that. I think that's a great piece that we add. But Louisiana Downs is another production that LTN's very proud of. If you watch it, if you've watched it in the past, before 2020, you saw a standard definition broadcast, grainy, not very high quality. Now you can look at it, and I see it in 1080i HD, where you can see the race as clear as you possibly can see it. We use some innovative cameras there. We use a slow-mo still camera at the finish line, which when we get a really good call at the wire, we seesaw back and forth. And from our vantage point, you could tell what the photo is going to look like from what we show. And we're proud of that. We also do as many cameras as we possibly can to make that program as interesting to the viewer as possible. We think there's a world too, like Contender Cam, at some point, where the user, maybe on simulcast, will be able to more or less create their own show, choose from cameras, see different things, maybe point themselves to part of the broadcast that isn't on the pure simulcast feed. And we await that day. We think there's a lot of possibilities for this remote type production, including maybe broadcasting training hours or other special events. And we think there's limitless possibilities.
Limitless is the word that came to mind when you start talking about morning workouts and being able to have the end user curate their own experience. There's a horse that tends to act up. You can just be watching a camera on that horse the whole time. The possibilities are really super intriguing. What do you see as the biggest issue facing the current landscape of simulcast productions? As somebody in the business, when you're just watching, without naming names, when you look around at different simulcast feeds, what do you see that could be being done better, generally speaking?
Yeah, so when I think about our game and the beauty and the majesty of it, I get disheartened when I turn a simulcast signal on and I see that simulcast signal is still in standard definition and it's got that grainy look, and we should all be dissatisfied about that, because I don't think
it's not good.
It's not good. It doesn't stand up well against other sporting events and other things that could take people's attention. As we look in this world, and notice the state by state change for sports betting, you know, we're going to be under competition. And, you know, I work on sports betting too. So like, I understand the landscape, but, as a fan and having an affinity for this game, I think, you know, that competition we're going to face is going to be serious. And I think the video component has as much to say about what we think about our game as anything. And when we have a broadcast that's in standard definition, it just shows like, well, you know, maybe our product, you know, needs an upgrade. I think when you looked at it 10 years ago, the upgrade to high definition was an expensive proposition. You know, racetracks had to really look and decide if they had the capital wherewithal to do that. But today they don't have to do that because like us, like LTN, you know, we could come in there and basically provide cameras and everything else, like all the infrastructure they were buying on the capital side previously, they don't have to buy that anymore. They could use our infrastructure to create the program. And I think from an expense point of view, you know, I don't think there's any reason not to do it. So as I talk to racetracks and I talk to them all the time, you know, I try to drive home that, you know, what you think it's going to take to move to HD is much different than the reality because the technology is caught up and now's a great time to move your product, you know, into a better visual space and get better distribution. Like I can't speak for anybody like TVG or any of the other broadcasters, but I'm going to assume that your product looks better when it's broadcast, you know, on somebody else's channel when it's in HD. And I imagine I can say definitively that's had an effect on some of the racetracks that we produce. I think that's
very
important component to driving loyalty and handle. And you just want more people watching your content. And
maybe some older people listening don't understand just how important that is in the sense that, you know, I grew up watching that stuff. But like, I think especially if you're trying to get away from the tired old saw that horse racing is just like an old person's game, I just try to imagine the, not even just millennials, but the younger people looking at our game for the first time in a sports betting world and not seeing it in HD, it would almost be a complete non-starter, you know, in terms of marketing to the younger people. You talked a little bit about what you see as the future of horse racing broadcasting on the simulcast level, that idea of the self-curated experience. What are some other innovations you see coming specifically in the broadcasting of horse racing?
Yeah, so you know, looking at the sports betting world, I could see the emergence of the sports book, you know, sort of like you see in the UK, but I think more destined for a food and beverage type a place, you know, where you could, you know, watch a game in a sports bar and bet on it. And then I, you know, I look at how I do this all the time. I go into like every Buffalo Wild Wings and every, you know, sports bar and take pictures. I try to understand, you know, how they're feeding their program to TVs. And I just see this world where you're going to have all kinds of sports. It's not just going to be the big four. It's going to be a lot of niche sports that people are just going to watch because they've wagered on them. And then you have horse racing, that sport that goes off every couple of minutes. You know, there's
fill in every gap, any programming gap you have, there's a race for it.
Every gap. Now, here's the problem. I got 24 TVs. How many of those are going to be horse racing in a Buffalo Wild Wings or a sports book or one of these places? Probably not that many. So I think what we're going to need to do, I think the biggest change we're going to see and that you're going to see this content be channelized more and possibly white labeled more for those kinds of destinations. When I say white labeled, meaning that it might have a brand. You know, well, TVG does a great job of this. TVG is the prime distributor of horse racing over, you know, cable systems and satellite systems, right? And they can't get to every race at every time. So, you know, maybe you see a world where there's a created channel that's white labeled for the particular sports betting institution, and they're curating themselves what they want you to see and what they want you to bet on, and making the most of the channel space that you're provided in those particular destinations. I hope that makes a lot of sense. I think that's just basically utilizing your shelf space, you know, for optimum playability.
Yeah, it's making a lot of sense. I suppose we shouldn't leave the discussion of TV broadcasting landscape without talking. And, you know, it's feel like I'm talking about the home team, given that Naira are sponsors. And, of course, JK on America's Day at the Races all the time. But I'd love to hear your professional opinion of what they've done over at Fox. To me, very innovative, promoting racing and covering racing like up the major sport that that many of us believe it still is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do a tremendous job. You're talking about a big production with, you know, a lot of cameras, a lot of depth of talent, a lot of information. Their tone with covering the races as deep as they do, and as few races as they do, to focus on what they believe is important, I think is a tremendous approach. Always like to tune in, you know, and see what they're saying. And I think the fact that it gets on the Fox channels is outstanding, because that brings hopefully new fans. Maybe they just watch something else, other sporting event that's on one of the Fox channels, and boom, they stick around for horse racing. And I hope they open up a wagering account. They bet on our game. I think I always say for us, our game is great value. You know, how many games can you go to and spend what you spend to get into a racetrack and maybe come out with some extra money on the other end? It's great value, and I think these broadcasts definitely do it a lot of justice.
That's a good. It's a good point about racing as a sport being gambling fueled. That ability to be able to go in there for comparatively very little money to other sports, and you know, you don't get the opportunity to leave the Islanders game very often with more money than you walked in with. And I do right. think that I think that's one of the interesting pivots of Fox for me. One of the innovations I'd say of them is a sports level production that covers it as a gambling game. I don't feel like we've seen all that much of that.
Yeah. Well, I obviously like the gambling component. So, you know, I'm always focused on, you know, being a ticket maker, like who can win and who can't win, and trying to take that approach and build a ticket. And, you know, I think another thing that we don't do enough is I build tickets with my friends. Right. And, you know, we pull money all together all the time. And I think that's another fun thing that maybe doesn't get talked about enough in our horse racing broadcasts, or even, you know, some of our discussions. But that's a great thing to do. Like go to the
players pools, yeah. Ideas like that. I think it's a good idea. And I agree it's underutilized. I know there was some political difficulties with it, particularly in the state of California, but it's something that, you know, can probably be done and done more in other places, a way to get newer players, especially to get them the bug, get them the thrill without dumbing it down, give them access to the more complicated aspect of the game by having somebody else, you know, write the tickets and explain the why of it and get to come along for the ride.
Right. And you know, look, I think in terms of, you know, attracting fans, I think both national broadcasts do a great job of trying to explain the game and trying to explain the wager to customers. And, you know, I think it has to start with that. I think, you know, these players who stumble upon our game, they need to know a little bit about the game. They need to know a little bit about how to wager on the game. And hopefully they have a friend or mentor who can help them, you know, do both of those and understand it to another level. But these national broadcasts, they do that for that. You know, they take the job of that mentor for a lot of new people yeah. coming to the game. But I do like the idea of family of four going to the track, or friends of four going to the track and pooling together, you know, whether it's $20 a man or $100 a man, whatever. And, you know, trying to build some tickets and trying to have some fun.
let's bring it back for just our last couple of minutes to you and your involvement in racing from the handicapping side before you got into your new role. When you look back at your software and the idea of having a web-based handicapping program, were you just too soon? I mean, obviously, it's something that has taken off with the success we've seen from the likes of DRF Formulator and Timeform US and more recently Equine Edge. Clearly, the future of form study isn't paper. It's doing it in a web-based platform. Is it one of those things where you feel like it just came at the wrong time?
I wouldn't say it came at the wrong time. I wound up just moving on to other things professionally. But I did talk to DRF about it, and we had a relationship for a number of years where I helped them out with some things that they needed done on the consulting side to analyze the business they were in, businesses that they wanted to be in, and one of those things was Formulator. So I believe they used my product at the time, it was called Handicapping OS, as an inspiration for how they could make Formulator web-based. And they did that a couple of years later. And, you know, it's a great product. A lot of people use it. And, I'm glad they did that. Long answer to your question, I do think, like, these web-based tools, they're going to be the future, because you have a lot of students graduating college with the knowledge base of programming and analytics and AI and all that kind of stuff. And I think our data, like the data of horse racing, is compelling. It's like it's a real world example that they could use, just unpack, like just download a BRIS file and like look, just try to learn what that is and how it works. And you could create all kinds of compelling handicapping angles from that, using what you've learned in school and make it web-based. And maybe, you know, maybe somebody listening to this is creating a homegrown product on their own today, and they get the inspiration to go ahead and commercialize that and share that with other people. I hope they do.
Yeah, I'm always hammering on about how I wish that there was the basic data free and easier for the exact person you're describing, because what I see happening is just what you said. They'll go on, you know, obviously when they want to make it a commercial product, that's when you need to have a license and pay for the data. And nobody's ever going to question if you're taking a premium product, you're taking that basic data and coming up with your own proprietary numbers and charging for that. But I feel like that the industry's stranglehold on its own data has done nothing but hold us back when it comes to the newer fan, in much the same way that the SD signals do.
Yeah, could be, right? Maybe the industry takes a different look at that at some point and says the way to get new fans is just put data in their hands. You know, it's a barrier, right? It's a barrier to entry for some of those. Like, I have to go pay for that. I understand why they do that, because there's a cost in collecting that. But, you know, maybe the times will modulate and people look at these business models differently and come up with a different way to underwrite the cost of collection and all that kind of stuff. And that part of the world is innovating, right? You know, you have some of the horse identification and timing products that are coming out, and, you know, they're getting better all the time. And I believe that data, when that's available, is going to open up a realm of possibilities for people that do handicapping and try to figure this stuff out.
It's been a bumpy road, at least as far as the timing stuff goes, but fingers crossed there's something good happening at the end of it. So you've already intimated that you do not have as much time as you would like to pursue handicapping and betting on races as you would like, but do you still get to play from time to time?
I'm a contest player too, so I'm trying to get qualified for 2022. I'm going to keep trying. I think that's an exciting avenue for people that like to handicap. I keep trying to think about ways that we could put a video angle to that, and I'm sure we'll reach that at some point. So I like that. I do like playing with my friends. I know I highlighted this, but I like that call on a Saturday. Hey, what are you doing? And you playing Santa Anita? Like, and all of a sudden the ticket's getting constructed and Venmo's being passed. And I think that's the coolest stuff in the world. Like, you know, how many other games can you be that much of a part of the game with, right? There's, it really is a good thing. And look, I trust my group to know, like, I don't even have to know what you're selecting. I don't care, right? I do care. I'm going to watch, but I don't have to be part of that handicapping decision.
Yeah, I'd much rather do the work, but if I can't do the work and I could just come along for the fun ride, hey, I'll if I'm doing 17 other things, I'm happy to just say, hey, JK, can I have a piece of that ticket or whatever it is, and go from there. It is always more fun when you do the work yourself and when you could bring people along for the ride. Well, this has been a great chance to catch up with you, Rich, and learn more about your life and your background and your business at LTN Global. For folks interested in learning more and or reaching out, what's the best way to find you?
Well, we're at ltnglobal.com, and my email address is richard.rosa@ltnglobal.com.
Couldn't be easier. Rich, well, thank you one more time, as well as your company, LTN Global. Really appreciate the time today. We want to thank our founding partners on the show, the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. You know, anytime we do a lot of handicapping on this network, anytime you do well, it's great to hear when people thank us and, you know, social media love and all that. But the only other thing I'll ask is, if you do ever hit it big, especially if it's from something you heard on our network, give back to the horses and the fantastic work they do over there at TRF, trfinc.org/players. You can also read about our new whiskey over on that link. Make a donation to them. Our friends at 10 Strike Racing always root for the purple and black around here. Very excited. Actually going to get a chance to see Marshall Graham of 10 Strike Racing this weekend up in Saratoga. That should be a lot of fun. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I am Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.